Hey everyone, Richard here. Before we get into today's episode, I want to briefly talk to you guys again about our membership program, Admission. So a lot of our listeners are Admission members, but for those of you who don't know, it's a hub that contains all of the tools, trainings, and templates that we use with real clients here at CTC. And not only that, you'll also get exclusive access to one-on-one consulting with our team of experts. You'll get exclusive group trainings. You'll get a private member forum to share learnings, to share war stories, to share information, to help each other grow your businesses. So for a limited time, we're offering the e-commerce diagnostic toolkit, which we discuss in this episode extensively. So the thing that we're talking about, we are offering for free to anyone who signs up for Admission before end of day Pacific time, Thursday, May the 25th. So please head over to youradmission.co, that's youradmission.co, and get started today. We'd love to see you there. All right, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the E-Commerce Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Gaffin, Director of Digital Product Strategy here at CTC, and joined once again, as I always am, by Taylor Holliday, CEO here at Common Thread Collective. Taylor, how are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Here for my checkup. Here to get diagnosed and that's for right. You to help me break down all that ails me.
Yep, that's right. Exactly. This is sort of a clinic session here. And so we have an exciting series of pods coming up over the next few weeks. What we're going to do is run the diagnostic report on a few different brands. We're initially thinking three. So today we're going to be running it on Bamboo Earth, which is something, if you've watched the presentation videos for the e-commerce diagnostic toolkit, you will have seen me running through at least the results page of this. So what we're going to do is I'm going to go over that, and we're going to kind of go through the results. And I'm going to press Taylor on what does this number mean? What can Bamboo Earth be doing better? What is the advantage of using this diagnostic on your business? And then how can you take the results and turn them into action? So Bamboo is its GQ score. And if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see I have pulled up on the screen share here the actual results page. This is the PDF that you can export from when you're actually done the assessment. Bamboo Earth's growth quotient is 119.7. And if you'll remember, if you've been listening for a while, you'll know that our sort of benchmark growth quotient score, the duckweed score, so to speak, the score at which you cross the threshold into being a brand that can grow in any environment is 130. So that means Bamboo Earth is right on the cusp, but there are certain things that can be done, or perhaps that need to be examined diagnostically, let's say, in order to get to that threshold. So we're at 119.7. Where can we make up those 10 points? Where can we start growing this? So, Taylor, let's jump into the table here. So this breaks down.
Can I add one thing real fast? I was just thinking about one of the things that we think about with GQ is to think about the number being illustrative of the growth potential of the business. Mm-hmm. And that there would be a correlation between the score and the anticipated growth rate of the business, right?
Right.
So when a business scores in this 119.7 range, the question is like, okay, well, how fast does a business like that grow, right? And I think this is, so I want to start with like Bamboo Earth as a little bit of context. So like last year in 2022, Bamboo Earth did $9 million in revenue, okay? And this year so far, we're sitting here on May the 24th, we've done $5 million in revenue. Okay. So we are looking at closer to $12 to $14 million this year. So somewhere between 50 to 70% growth this year. Okay. And that's going to be profitable growth. So that's not like, I would think of duckweed as being closer, which is 130, being closer to that 100% annual growth rate. Yeah. Whereas in this range, the 100 to 130 is going to be somewhere in the 30 to 70% growth, which is still really good. Now, as a smaller size brand, you'd probably want to see, you know, for the best brands growing north of that 50%, Bamboo is going to be pretty close to that. So I think that to take these scores and try and tie them back to illustrating growth potential and that translating into real growth inside of a business. And we'll talk about this over the course of this series where we're going to examine three businesses that are growing at different rates. And we're going to sort of explore this idea and the connection between your score and what that means about that potential being realized. And so I think for Bamboo Earth, like, and to contextualize this score, that's where we're at. just, you know, full open kimono here. That's like we like to be with Bamboo Earth. That's where we're at. So that score sets that up for you as a little bit of additional context.
Yeah, right. No, that's important. And other things maybe to point out too is like to explain again what growth quotient is not, which is it's not necessarily a measure of the health of your business. Like if you have a low growth quotient score, it doesn't mean you're going bankrupt tomorrow. It could, but it probably doesn't. And then also like although there is the anchoring in the objective truth of your growth rate, there's also an element here where the only person you should be comparing yourself to as far as growth quotient goes is yourself. And thinking through,
that's right,
to what extent can I get this number up without worrying too much about other brands that I see that have numbers in, you know, maybe 200 plus, right? So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So we're going to examine exactly how we can do that with Bamboo right now and think through ways that we can bring that growth rate up to closer to that 100% mark.
Other thing I'll say as we dive into these results is I think it's the right score for Bamboo Earth. Like one of the things we did a lot with this score, Richard, is we sort of ran it on brands. We tried to sort of assess qualitatively how that mapped with our experience of them, their performance, to really hone in the algorithmic weights of each section. And I think this is right for Bamboo Earth. Bamboo Earth is a very good brand, but it's not duckweed. Like there are things that need to improve in order to make it a true outlier. It's really healthy. You can run a good e-commerce brand at this level, but I think it appropriately considers us just outside of that tier of truly elite e-commerce brands. So I think it does a good job of contextualizing what Bamboo Earth is as a business, which is a business that's running at 20% profit, that's growing at 50% a year, that's in that low eight figure range. And that's, I think, a really good business, but not the elite of elite.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there are some pretty clear ways, I think, that we can see where improvement needs to be made to bring Bamboo to that level, right? Now, of course, executing that is a different story. And that's also another consideration. But at the same time, I think one of the beauties of this is, and this is me patting myself on the back, kind of, but is that the way in which it shows the effect on the GQ score that missed benchmarks have, and of course exceeded benchmarks have as well. And so again, to quickly review the 10 duckweed metrics, the 10 core metrics that make up your growth quotient score, we have cost of delivery as a percent of revenue. That's basically variable cost. OpEx as percent of revenue. That's basically fixed costs. Cash conversion cycle, how long you have to flow cash before you see a return on it. 60-day incremental revenue growth percentage, how much does a customer's value grow over 60 days? How much does it grow over 1 year? And then are you first order profitable? That's FOV to NCAC. Number of distribution channels, do you have too many eggs in one basket? Percentage of organic traffic, are you over leveraged on paid? And then 1 year LTV to NCAC, how much does your businesses or does your customer's value improve relative to the amount of money that you spent to acquire them? And then finally, the number of revenue peaks, how much of your calendar is being used to its full potential is maybe a way to think about that as well, right? So those 10 characteristics, if you can hit certain benchmarks within them, create a scenario where you can grow closer to that 100% rate. So let's quickly look over here, Taylor. One thing that jumps out to me right away is the one affecting the GQ score the most is the percentage of organic traffic. So The easy interpretation here is that it just means Bamboo is over leveraged on paid, is not getting enough organic. 35% of traffic comes from organic sources rather than the benchmark 50, resulting in a 15-point hit to the growth quotient score. So talk me through your thoughts on that, maybe the reality of why that's the situation and so forth.
GQ perfectly nails our biggest liability, that we are leveraged on paid. And again, because this is so important, I think, for brands and brand owners to think about, we've been in the process. We've run two sale processes for Bamboo Earth over the last 8 months, and we've been in final stages of closing on both of them. And the multiple that we were getting and the value that we were getting for those businesses was limited by this liability. We're aware of this. This provides, like when you think about an asset that someone would be acquiring, they want to consider all the ways in which that asset might not yield what it wants. And the reality is that the index of paid media, in particular Facebook, is a channel risk associated with Bamboo Earth. Now, it's one that we feel really confident in managing because we're really good at it. And we have a really good system for it. But the new owner may not have that same discipline or skill in a similar way. And therefore, it's a greater risk for them than it is even for us. And so this And the other thing about that organic traffic does is it significantly balloons when you have it, your first order value to new acquisition cost, because you get more organic new customer acquisition that affects that number, which improves your 1 year LTV to CAC. It improves all of the value propositions of the business when it's present. When that organic demand exists, it's one of the most powerful leverages for growth that any business can have. And for Bamboo Earth, it sort of definitely highlights this. Now, as we think about that as a business, I've had a lot of conversations lately with SEO experts because I'm sort of exploring this service expansion for CTC and the best way to productize it and think about it as a service. And, you know, Andrew Ferris has this metaphor that he's used forever as it relates to organic versus paid, which is organic traffic is growing rice and paid traffic is going to the store and buying rice. And so there's definitely a latent payback on the investment in organic demand creation, right? It's going to be a lot of upfront cost and work for something that's going to pay back later. And so Bamboo Earth, in its current desire for profitability, just hasn't yet decided to make that investment. And part of this is all like contingent on the window in which you're trying to maximize profit and things like that. But if I were to take a step back and say, I've now made the decision to run Bamboo Earth for the next 10 years, I would absolutely make this the core thing that I would try and invest in trying to create and solve for. And I think that's what it highlights.
Yeah, it's interesting too, going over a few of these as I have in the last couple of weeks. It's interesting the stories that particular scores can tell as well. And so one thing that I think is interesting that you were mentioning just now is that there's a sense in which that this number for Bamboo Earth is propped up, or rather the negative impacts are minimized by the fact that, you know, we're sort of the Facebook wizards or whatever. That's kind of how we made our bread, is at being good at paid traffic. And so the 35% organic traffic score, while it's a long-term liability, we've been able to paper that over for a long time because we're good at Facebook. And that's actually taken us, maybe turned us away from investing in organic, growing organic sources the way we should have.
And the reality is that while there's a benchmark for these scores, there's no one way to comprise a business, right? And so we have to make the choice that if we're going to run this business this way, we have to leverage the really high gross margin. Like, that's an advantageous thing that allows us to do that, and that we keep our OPEX lean. So both of these things, like in terms of, if you think about sort of four character accounting principle, like 25% profit, 25% CAC, 25% cost of delivery, 25% OPEX. Well, the reality is you can comprise those different ways. You can run 50% CAC and 15% CAC and 15% cost of delivery. Like, that's a way to do it. Or you could run, some people run 5% marketing because they have all the organic demand and they spend more on the people and OPEX and other, like, there's no one right way, but you have to be conscious of your way. And for us, we know our leverage point. We know the value proposition. We have high margin. We're great at Facebook. Mm-hmm. We're great at cost caps, discipline, that sort. And so we build the system to produce for us in light of that reality.
Yeah, and maybe another way to think about it too is that, like, Bamboo Earth can be a 130 GQ brand without bringing that organic traffic number up. Like, the beauty of this as well is that, like, if you exceed benchmark in certain areas, it can bring you to a point where your growth potential is also still high. It's just, this is more like a way to think through, these are the realities of this business. And these are, if we can't, or maybe we're, you know, we sort of understand that we're better at paid traffic or whatever, and we can make a decision to not invest in organic traffic growth and still be okay and still be growing because we're investing in other places where we might be stronger as well. So as we look across this table, Taylor, is there anything else that jumps out to you as a story behind it? Or maybe, like, another way to think about it too is, like, in what way does this split GQ spread, the spread of scores, reflect the reality of Bamboo Earth as a business?
I mean, I could go through every single one of them and talk about the unique dynamics. So let's run it down. So this is definitely an episode I would watch on YouTube if you can, or we're going to post on Twitter now, the long form. You can follow, you'll get that from at Taylor Holiday or at Common Thread Co. But just going down the line, Bamboo Earth has such a unique position of all of it. So cost of delivery, this is the one of the core value propositions of this product category, is that it is massively high gross margin. Most, the actual higher percentage of the variable cost comes from shipping and fulfillment. Like, the gross margin's close to 85-90%, right? And so you have a really powerful leverage, and that's what skincare mostly is. We produce our own product. So our actual costs are in the bulk purchase of raw materials and then the production of the product itself. So we actually buy the raw materials and we manufacture the product, which does get to, I'll jump to point number three on the cash conversion cycle. Part of the reason we don't have a negative cash conversion cycle is because we bulk buy raw material. And that actually starts our cash conversion cycle. So we're buying, you know, actual like raw ingredients for making moisturizer. And so because it's so cheap, we'll buy a lot of it and store it for a decent amount of time for production. And because it's not expensive enough, the cash conversion cycle not being negative isn't a dramatic impact on us. And it's a little bit of the novelty. Now, could we potentially solve that? And are there discussions about whether producing our own product's worth it? Yeah, there is. And some of the buyers in the interactions didn't love that we did that. And so It's just definitely a thing to consider. But right now, we're in a really healthy cash position. We don't have a lot of liability in that place. And so it's not something we're aggressively having to go after to solve for. So that's something to consider. Now, we could probably increase the growth rate by being willing to push customer acquisition costs up a little bit. If we had a negative cash conversion cycle, it might enable us to faster growth. So that's like sort of that trade-off. But that's sort of one of the novelties with Bamboo Earth. We produce our own product, we bulk buy raw materials, and we produce it. So you got anything you want to ask about that?
Oh, no. Well, yeah, I was just gonna, maybe not ask particularly, but just sort of point out that I think that raises a good point, which is that there are certain problems, although it may have a negative impact on your growth potential, there are certain problems that are just easier to solve or more efficient to solve than others. And so the idea of and this is maybe me coming from as somebody without operational experience, figuring out how to bring the costs or rather how to solve the cash conversion cycle problem for Bamboo Earth, given that you're manufacturing all your own stuff, seems like a whole thing, right, at this point. And there's other ways definitely to solve for the bit. Like, it seems like the organic traffic issue seems like a way easier and more pressing solve, even though there's a lot of potential on the cash conversion cycle piece. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know that either is easy. I think it's just like, what is the biggest imperative? And like, When you have a lot of cash, like we have a lot of cash in the bank because the business produces like 80% free cash flow to EBITDA, which is like awesome. Solving for a negative cash conversion cycle on a low cost is not a huge necessity, right? Mm. So even though it's not ideal, in terms of it's more of like not necessarily the ease of problem, but just the hierarchy of them. So I would say that the organic demand, if I was going to invest dollars into solving a problem, would be a more immediate, it would like move higher up the list for me. So that's just sort of what I think about it. They're both hard. There's no easy problem necessarily as much as just like hierarchically relative to our present position, which one should we solve and why?
Go ahead.
Yeah, cool. Continuing down, the next thing I was going to talk about is OpEx. And I think we got into this a lot last episode, so I don't need to belabor it, but we've gotten lean and it makes a big difference. And there were things that we didn't need and there was lessons that we learned, and we managed the business in a way that like keeps us able to produce a lot of profit because our operating costs are low. We have a warehouse in North Carolina, but the rest of the company's remote, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the reality. That really helps us. We're lean on the people side.
Right. And then actually, I think it would make sense then to segue that into talking about retention, 60-day growth percentage. Because again, like we mentioned this last week as well, part of like the Bamboo Earth story that like if you're in the CTC community, you've probably heard a million times, is that the solve for Bamboo Earth, the big unlock, was the 60-day retention. So we were losing money on first order. We thought we were getting killed. It turns out we were actually fine because of the way that the customer journey was basically over that period of time. Now, obviously, the situation is different and we have to be lean. We have to be first order profitable. And I ran this a couple of weeks ago, so it could have changed by now, but the 60-day incremental revenue growth percentage is actually below benchmark. It's almost there, but it's just a touch off.
I would push back. So this is where if I were to say you should change a number, I think the 30 and 100 are actually elite and the benchmark should be a little lower. Like,
sure.
Like if I were to argue about any metric, like, no way Bamboo Earth at 28.87 in 60 days should be a negative score. Like, that's a really, really good score, actually, I think. So I think that I look at those and I go like, man, the 3,100 are like, that's, and this is the tension between this phrase benchmark, which to me sends, like, it can be understood to mean like the average score, or it could intended to mean the elite score, and I think you mean to mean it elite, and that's fair. I think there's just like we did with cost of delivery, where we went from 25 to say like that's like too aspirational. 30 is really still really really good. I think if we took these down to like 25 and 85, it would give a view of Bamboo Earth that I think is probably more realistic. But nonetheless, both of these scores are part of the powerhouse that allows us to take break even on first order, which allows us to be aggressive about new customer acquisition growth, which allows us to constantly expand the existing customer revenue of the business over time. And it just makes it so that Bamboo Earth is a really safe growth story, which is we are disciplined that every month we take as much new customer volume as we can at break even and allow the existing customer revenue to just keep expanding over time. And as long as we keep doing that, keep growing the active customer file, the business is going to keep growing, the profit's going to keep expanding. And that's the plan for the business. And it's because of that LTV. People love the product. They come back for it. We've got a good merchandising funnel where we go from mini kits to full size. We've got growing subscription. All these elements are components of the business that make the future look really good from a margin and revenue expansion for Bamboo.
All right, that makes sense. Yeah, and I guess that these numbers are not too far off even that elite benchmark score, right? So the impact on overall GQ scores is minimal, although we can also think about like maybe it does make sense to change the benchmark at some point. But that being said, like we're still like the 1 year growth percentage is 102%. I mean, that's
it's still amazing. Like yeah, exactly. And so for those of you that aren't maybe listening or watching on video, what we're talking about is if you took the average order value, the incremental revenue realization over the subsequent 60 days divided by that initial AOV. So in other words, what percentage does your take rate from the customer grow over a period of time, right? So it's basically a fixed period LTV, right? So it's a 60-day customer value. And that's what grows 28.87% in 60 days for Bamboo Earth and 102% in a year. And those numbers are what inform the way we think about the next metric, which is our first order value. And we would use big V value. We're talking about net value here to connect to new customer acquisition costs. So in other words, how much money do we make versus what we paid for it? This is sort of a ROIC principle, right? Like return on invested capital. We invest a certain amount of money in acquisition. How much money do we get back on day one right away? And you'll see that our score is 0.06, which basically means we break even. And that is how we manage the business. We manage to a 1.4 AMER, which is break even on first order. And as long as we maintain that, we know that all the future value creation is net profit. It's just gain. And so that's the goal. That's the benchmark here is, can you acquire new customers at first order profit? It's all gravy from there.
Right. Yeah, I think, we sort of discussed that this week and last. So I think we can move on then to the next four metrics. And actually, I would probably maybe we can go to 1 year LTV to NCAC as well, because actually that's even though, first order value is just barely break even, the 1 year LTV to NCAC is actually pretty good, with the benchmark being 0.5, Bamboo Earth is at 1.43. So yeah, is there anything to speak to that too there?
Yeah. So another way to express that, so there expresses a ratio there, but I want you to think about it like an investor. So I want you to right now, before I sort of explain this, think about how much money would you want on an individual investment in a year? So your personal financial advisor comes to you and says, hey, I've got an investment opportunity for you. The expected return is what percent in a year, right? Now I'm going to give you some benchmarks here. So like an index fund is sort of notoriously going to return 8% annually on your money. And that's sort of like the gold standard, right? Bitcoin has had 10-year compound annual growth rate of like 100%. Like that's like the greatest performing asset of all time, right? Like, so in this scenario, what we're saying is that a 1 year LTV, which is again, net value after cost of delivery, after acquisition, divided by the customer acquisition cost. So again, you invest customer acquisition cost, you net a certain amount of dollars. The ratio of those is your return on investment. Now, if we were doing a true return on investment, we would do it after taxes and we would include a cost of capital. So it's not quite ROIC, but it is this idea that if you can get a 50% return on that investment, that is like outperforming every investable asset class in the world, Bamboo Earth gets a 143% return in a year. And when you start to think about new customer acquisition through this lens, it transforms the way you think about your business. If we hold first order profitability and the customer value increases 100% in a year, our return on that capital is 143% in a year. And for us, we're like take every dollar we have and put it into that machine, maintain that ratio, and there is no greater return that we could create in our life as founders and owners of the business. And so we want to keep fueling it. And that's how we think about it and why it's such a special vehicle for the deployment of capital.
Okay, so then let's turn to the final three metrics here, which are, these are, at least according to this report, the ones that are having the greatest collective impact on Bambooworth's growth, GQ, and their growth potential, right? So first is the number of distribution channels. We have two. The percentage of organic traffic we've already discussed a little bit. And then finally, the number of revenue peaks. Obviously, the four-peak calendar has been a cornerstone of our philosophy for a few years now, but Bamboo is also missing in a couple of places. So let's talk about these three and maybe break down first distribution channels and then revenue peaks. Does that score seem fair, the way that it's affecting the overall score? And then talk through what the situation is.
Yeah, these are the other biggest limiters for Bamboo Earth, I think. Number of distribution channels is, are we in retail? Are we in marketplace? Are we in any B2B distribution? And so we have Amazon marketplace and we have D2C too, right? No wholesale at all. It's a huge potential expansion opportunity for us, but we're not set up to do it from a packaging standpoint, from an internal operational structure. We don't have a sales force. Like, there'd be a lot of work to start to figure it out, but it's a limitation. And it's a growth frontier that most businesses are expanding to omni-channel distribution, and that's a lot of revenue realization for brands. So, again, in the event that we're going to hold Bamboo Earth for 10 years, it's something that's certainly on the horizon and should be seen as a limitation of Bamboo Earth for sure. Or alternatively seen as like a good sign that there's a lot of growth left. Either way. And then in terms of number of revenue, you wanted to say something about that one?
No, distribution.
So the revenue peaks, this is probably the one where I have the most problem with the internal Bamboo Earth team that distinguishes between how I would view it as a day-to-day operator versus maybe the team. And again, it's just, I tend to be more of a traditional marketer. People don't, like, I think I get painted as a media buyer a lot, but the reality is that most of the businesses that I've developed from Kalo to when I was at PowerBalance, like, they all existed pre-Facebook and they existed in a very traditional marketing calendar world that I deeply appreciate. Mm-hmm. I'm a big campaign story moment guy if I were running marketing for a brand, and Bamboo Earth's website looks the same year round. It drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, I want them to merchandise and storytell around moments, product releases, campaigns way more often. But right now it's like they've got a machine that's working so well that, again, it's this trade-off between an investment in the production that would take to make those assets, to design those things, and the short-term hit on profitability versus the long-term value creation. And the other thing about Bamboo Earth is, I think these two peaks, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Richard, are Black Friday in January.
Yeah.
They're right next to each other. And so that creates this situation for Bamboo where their biggest months of the year are December, January, and then it's like try and survive the rest of the year. And I think we could be a lot more thoughtful about planning some big campaigns around, you could use International Women's Day, you could use Mother's Day, you could use new skin stories in the summer of the different challenges you face versus the start of winter versus planning different things that I think we could take advantage of. That, again, if we go into 10-year building mode, I think that part of building the brand story and moments is another huge, I would say it is the second biggest liability to me when I look at this in terms of its ability to prove that they're a brand that's going to connect with customers and drive stories and impact in disproportionate ways. I think it appropriately ranks it as the second largest problem.
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense that I think for Bamboo, the two revenue peaks, this actually may even be just sort of a quirk of the way we're calculating it the two revenue peaks might actually be November and December, in which case it's basically one big peak. And I think, like a lot of you, as you fill this out, will find that may be the case, that it's simply a spike in the holidays. And then the rest of the year, it's just sort of business as usual. And I think we talked a little bit about this on the podcast before, but there's so much opportunity. But the number one reason that people buy is because the opportunity to buy now makes sense to them, right? We were talking about, like, do people buy our shorts because they have whatever fabrics and are something wicking away, whatever? They don't. People buy shorts because it's summer and it's hot and they need them, right? And so I think, like, that's another huge advantage there's a huge potential there to harness the number one reason people buy throughout the course of the year. And it's definitely something that Bamboo is missing on right now, because these two revenue peaks are actually kind of, as you were pointing out, one big revenue peak. Okay, so looking at this overall then, just as we sort of look at all 10 metrics, the way that we stack up against them, what is the first thing that you would do? What does this tell you to do as far as action goes?
Yeah. So I think there's a few things. We talked about organic demand. So I begin to build a plan around that. I think the second thing really I would go to, because I think it's the shortest term, easiest thing to fix, is to design a marketing calendar that creates story and moment to drive disproportionate. That's a little bit more investment into merchandising. And think about merchandising just as like visual representation of the campaign or product sale in the moment. It's what your website looks like at Christmas that frames the product as gifting. It like gets into a gift frame visual. I would have some special packaging, some layout, some bundling, some different ways to present it, to having a big summer campaign that has to do with whether it's how your skin's affected by heat and how we, again, I would just reorganize the products, name the bundles different, come up with different ways to do it, different visuals of people and like the whole new model shoots and product photography. All of that would be the thing that I would go to first. And alongside that would be a content machine about all of those skin problems, stories related to seasons that would form up the SEO and organic traffic strategy. So it'd be a connection between a marketing calendar initiative that outlines all the core drivers for purchase, culturally trend moments, including product releases and promotions, that builds a content strategy that drives SEO and tries to capture some of that demand for organic traffic and solves those two at the same time. That would be my primary mechanism, because the rest of it, candidly, is really good. It's just really good. I probably wouldn't explore wholesale yet. There's just some bigger underlying infrastructure things that would be required there. Amazon continues to grow as a portion of our business. So that investment, we've run out of inventory. We've got to sort of solve the supply chain side of Amazon to make sure we don't ever run out of stock there. Mm-hmm. So there's some work to do on that demand planning side for Amazon. That's also something to solve for. And that's really it. That's the thing to go after in my mind.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So, okay, so here's a question then, and this is not meant to call anyone out or whatever, but like, what's preventing that from happening right now?
These things tend to be like, well, so two things. One is we were in a sale process. Maximizing your TTM EBITDA in that time is really important. And so investing, think about what goes into planning a campaign, photo shoots, production, product photography, like all this asset development that tends to be a front-end investment, latent value capture, that's going to like increase your OPEX for a bit. And so it just was like sort of an unnecessary thing to do in the moment that we were in. Again, this all is this question that every business has to answer, which is, in what window are you attempting to maximize profit? Because you want to realize your investment in the window that you're trying to sort of maximize that outcome for sale, whatever. But for us, it's like just the period that we were in, deciding that we were possibly going to sell the business, led us to not make short-term investment with long-term payback. And I think that's probably why. I also just think that, like, I don't know that Dave, who's the president, and Josh, I don't know that they share exactly my methodology for how I would run a business if I was running the day-to-day.
Right.
And obviously we're all in constant dialogue, but they're doing so well that I'm also, you know, there's a lot of space. Like, I don't have authority over them. They're doing a great job and mm-hmm. I trust them, and my way is not the only way. And so they have space to operate and we chat. And I think that they would, Ian, you know, who runs creative, he's been my partner for a really long time, he's probably more of a brand guy, would like to see more of that happen. But at the same time, they've got a system and engine that's effectively driving profitable growth. And so it's hard to feel like you need to fix that when you're producing, you know, 70% annual growth at 20%+ EBITDA. Like, that's just a really healthy thing to do. So we're sort of nitpicking here in terms of the things that have to be done.
Sure,
but it's more like, if we wanted to make this, you know, a $100 million business, what would we need to do? And I think that's where it would lie.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good indicator too of like how much interpretive work I think has to go into understanding what this chart means relative to your business uniquely. And I think that's also a good illustration of the fact that this is a measure of growth potential rather than a measure of like the health of the business. Because as you're pointing out, Bamboo Earth is doing great. And the fact that it's not, that it's missing, I mean, barely, but missing the duckweed threshold or whatever, is not necessarily an indicator that Bamboo Earth is in like a bad place or something like that. It's more that there are some pretty obvious levers to pull in order to expand growth. But of course, you have to take into account everything that you know about the way the business operates in order to do that.
That's right.
Cool. All right. Well, so I think that kind of wraps that up. Is there anything else that you want to hit on this, particularly on Bamboo Earth, on interpreting GQ scores? Anything else?
Just that over the next 3 weeks, our hope is to start here with Bamboo Earth. Next week and the week after, we're going to have two brands on slightly different portions of the spectrum. We're going to show you what a truly elite duckweed brand looks like inside of it. And then we're going to give you a brand that's facing more challenges to their growth and maybe is closer to flat or even year over year, and sort of analyze the difference. And I think it's just going to continue to reveal the power of this algorithm, right? Like this idea that there are these key inputs and drivers of growth that you can go in action against. And you'll notice in here that, like, and I'm a broken record on this, but there's nothing about how many iterations of ad creative we make. Like, you know, like, not to say that that's not a part of our process. It is, we make them, but the underlying mechanics that enable growth are they're genetic level. They're deeper than that about the attributes of the business that you can go solve for. And you want to create the circumstances in which most of your ads are likely to drive the outcome that you want. And I think that's the reality of what Bamboo Earth is that a 1.4 AMER is not a high bar. That's not elite level Facebook performance. Like I think it's like 40th percentile on our CTC data set in terms of our Facebook ROAS. Like it's not this remarkable Facebook ad account, but it drives a lot of volume inside of a really profitable business because the underlying business makes it so that the requirement of the efficiency isn't that high. Mm-hmm. And that's actually what you want. You don't want your requirement of your ad performance to be astronomical because it's really hard to achieve. And you want to make it so that you're most likely to succeed most often. And that's how we really are sort of trying to inform the world with this methodology.
Yeah, definitely. I think like this is maybe one of the more tangible expressions of something that I think we've been trying to do, like a thought project that you've certainly been on for the last few years, which is that if you can establish a framework of basic truths about the world of business and the world of e-com, then the actual tactics you use to execute that, like that's, you can sort of do whatever you want and survive in whatever circumstance. Because if the only thing you have is to make more ad creative iterations without understanding why or what that affects, then there's no real point. But because it's easy and you don't have to think about it, people often end up going to that anyway. But if you think about if creating maybe a bunch of iterations of ad creative is actually a way to affect probably FOV to NCAC, maybe a couple of other things as well, as a tool that is in service of that, if you even need to be working on that, then that's a place that you should be putting effort and thinking about. But you have to think about it in terms of this in sort of philosophical whole or whatever.
That's a great way to sort of frame it. It affects 1/10 of these numbers, right? Maybe you could argue that offer design affects LTV too, and I would buy that, but that's not creative iteration testing. Like it affects 1/10 of this, right? And so I think that's where it feels like when I say creative's overrated, what I mean is not that it's not important, but it's that it should be treated as 1/10 of the problem. You know, like, and I think if you put it into that context, then it really makes sense. And oftentimes it's just bad math. Like the illustration I try and do with people is this idea that like, so I have a Twitter account, right? I've been tweeting for a long time, but let me see real fast if I can tell you over the course of my life, how many tweets I've sent. Oh, I thought it told me this, but it's got to be in the tens of thousands of tweets that I've sent. Okay? For Bamboo Earth, we've been around, you know, 7 years. We've probably created thousands of ads, maybe not tens of thousands. But if you said to me, Taylor, your growth strategy for your Twitter account is that the next tweet you write has to be better than every tweet you've ever written before it, my likelihood that the next thing I write on Twitter is going to outperform all the 10,000 things that came before it is like zero. The likelihood is about zero. The same is true for your ads. The likelihood that the next ad you make is going to outperform every ad that we've ever made in Bamboo Earth is basically zero, right? And I don't want to be beholden to my growth strategy contingent on the idea that I produce like 0.001 percentile outcomes. That's like that means you are very likely to fail. Mm-hmm. So instead, what I want to do is create the circumstance by which I don't need my next tweet or my next ad to be better than every other ad before it. In fact, I've got a lot of ads that I think are still really good. And in fact, most of my ads, if they're average, then I grow. Just like if my next tweet is average and I produce enough of them, I keep growing. I don't want to have to produce these massive outliers. And so I think that's what we're trying to create is this circumstance in which you are likely to repeatably succeed by doing average things. Like that's actually what we want to happen.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And of course, like the worst version of that scenario is that you're trying to create a 0.001% outcome. And if you were to create that outcome, it actually wouldn't matter that much because it's not the most urgent thing to do.
Exactly. Right. And like your margins still wouldn't be that good. Yeah. You know, like, and yeah, exactly. you would, even when you didn't, you wouldn't capture that much value because you weren't in the right position to do so because you had, you know, not enough inventory because your cash conversion cycle sucks. Like that's why this is, that's such a great call out, Richard, is that like, even when you do produce that outlier results, are you in a position to take advantage of it and reap the benefit of it necessary? And if not, then that sucks too. So yeah. I think it's a great call out. I would really encourage everybody to go get this score. It's simple and will highlight for you actions to take immediately. And to help your whole team frame up a set of KPIs that you can action against as an organization, from your ops team to your marketing team to your retention leader, everybody has a role to play in improving this score, and improving it will improve your business.
Great. Well, thanks, folks, for listening. We'll see you next week. But as always, we appreciate y'all listening, and tune in next week or over the next few weeks as we go back into the diagnostic assessment with a couple of other brands to show you the breadth of what can happen and the sort of number of strategic interpretations that you can have of this product. But of course, as always, we want to see your GQ. We want you to get this. We want to find out where you lie on this chart. So go ahead and get it.